And I think we've just scratched the surface as to what all is possible when you embed banking products in the B2B, B2B2C setting. And the use cases that keep emerging are just fascinating. What ultimately is going to happen is the dust is going to settle. The real use cases for what we call these days banking as a service will emerge, and they will solve real world problems because the technology will be available, the understanding is there, people learn from the mistakes that have been made, and that's where the real excitement comes in.
Welcome to FinTech Confidential, bringing you the people, tech, and companies that change how you pay and get paid. Welcome to Accrued, the FinTech Confidential series presented by LoanPro. In this series, we're deconstructing the complexities of lending and exploring the compliance, optimization, modernization, and personalization through insightful conversations with the industry's best. I'm Ted Huff, along with my co-host Sarah Howell, stepping in for Colton today. And we're here to guide you through the intricate lending world, whether you're deep in LendTech or just intrigued how the technology is reshaping lending. You're right in the right place. And now let's dive into another episode of Accrued. So Robert, I'm super happy to have you on. As you and I were talking before we hit the record button, the last time you and I sat down personally face-to-face was at Money 2020 last year. So I'm really glad that we had this opportunity to find out what's happening over there at FinWise.
Likewise. And even though it was only October, right, when 2020 happened, a ton has happened since. And I think anyone that follows the industry news sees there's new things happening every week that affect what we do and how we do it. While it's a little bit of a crazy time, it's also, in my opinion, a very exciting time because while what's happening is headwinds for some,
yep,
for others, and I would count us among that, it's really a tailwind.
Because Sarah is new to the show, I want to give the audience kind of a little bit of a background of who she is before I dive into who Robert is and what the bank's doing. But let me dive in first with Sarah. So Sarah is the Vice President of Partnerships at LoanPro, where she leverages her extensive experience in fostering collaboration between financial institutions and fintechs. Her expertise in leading partner programs at Visa and Infinite has prepared her to drive growth through innovative strategies at LoanPro. Welcome, Sarah, to the show.
Thanks so much for the introduction, Ted. Excited to be here. Robert, great to have you on the show. Looking forward to all that you have to share with our audience.
Likewise. Good to see you too.
In today's episode, we're putting the spotlight on FinWise Bank, a leader in the lending as a service space. Robert Kyle, the Chief FinTech Officer for FinWise, has dedicated his career to revolutionizing sponsor banking, enhancing visibility, and providing control for FinTech partners through innovative programs. Today's journey is going to showcase how FinWise leverages technology alongside with traditional banking principles to offer groundbreaking solutions. Their commitment to compliance, innovation, and empower the FinTech partnerships sets the stage for what we're going to be talking about today. Robert will be sharing his insights from his extensive background and the pivotal role that he has taken at FinWise in shaping the future of fintech banking. As we explore how FinWise Bank helps fintech brands disrupt the traditional banking model, we'll uncover Robert's transformative impact in driving compliance and innovation in the fintech ecosystem.
Robert, it's so great to have you on. Great to see you again. I know when we first met, you were at Sutton Bank, which has such a great history in the sponsor bank space. But I know that your career didn't start at Sutton, and I know that you're going to do some great things. You are doing great things at FinWise, but give us a little history about your career path and trajectory.
Yeah, so my background in banking goes back almost 40 years. I think in September, it's 40 years ago that I started in banking over in Europe, where I grew up and did my schooling and got the degree that was needed if you wanted to be the CEO of a financial institution. And that included everything that German banks do, things like import, export financing, running around on the trading floor of the stock exchange to commercial banking, consumer banking, and so on. But eventually, you know, I ended up in the U.S., 30-some years ago, and initially nobody knew what to do with my banking background, and it took a little while to get back into it. But I was then in the late 90s. I got back into banking, in particular in 99, into payments, and spent initially a few years at what became Wells Fargo, focusing on ATM debit processing for banks and credit unions. Mm-hmm. And then from there left to spend 17 years at U.S. Bank Elan Financial, doing the same with a couple other niche markets. And had a leadership role there, eventually left, and that led me through over one detour to Fiserv. And that's how I became an almost involuntary participant in the world of fintech. Because what happened is the role for which I was hired at Fiserv didn't quite materialize, wasn't vetted with the CEO at the time. And then people tried to figure out, what do we do with Robert, right? And after about 6 months of some busy work, when that was done, someone said, well, you know, there's these companies like Chime that are popping up, Moneyline. Can you figure out if there's something we have that we could sell to them? Right. And honestly, I didn't want to do that, right? But at the same time, I didn't want to change jobs again. So kind of bit the bullet. They gave me one employee, and together we sat there like, what do we do, right? We don't even know what a fintech really is. And so we started to look at what do we have, what could be, you know, reposition a little bit, take some Fiserv solutions, glue them together differently. And I guess even just, I would say to my surprise, it really, really took off. And the team grew really fast and got exposure to some really good names, but also the banks in the industry. And when some changes at Fiserv happened and I decided to make a career change, I ended up at Sutton for a little bit. But then when FinWise reached out to see if I had an interest of moving them from just lending as a service to the full range of fintech solutions, from the BIN sponsorship and payments as a service, I kind of found my forever home, right? Because it's the right culture that's doing things correctly, but also scalable. And so it was kind of the perfect match.
Awesome.
You know, Robert, as you described your journey coming from traditional banking and all of the different pieces, from investments to the commodity piece of it and being on the floor, and then getting into Fiserv and being asked to figure this thing out, I think it would have given you a different perspective of what is really needed for a sponsor bank relationship. What ends up happening a lot of times with a lot of my consulting clients is they ask me, hey, what makes a sponsor bank not just good, but truly stand out? And I'd love for you to break down for us how FinWise is cutting through that noise in the sponsor banking world.
Based on something that happened earlier this week, it may sound a little humorous, but the answer to that is don't be a bass. Right. Because BaaS banking as a service, I think, has gotten a reputation of practices on how not to do it. Right. I mean, for too long, what we've seen is there's some fintech that stands up a program, in many ways does whatever they want, and then finds a bank that basically says, yeah, I sponsor this, but doesn't really have the line of sight and control that is needed. And so it's this, you know, rent a bank type setup that is often associated with BaaS. And in order to do it right, I think the proper way to do it is really embedded banking, meaning you take bank products, bank services, bank solutions, and embed them into a third-party ecosystem. Because legally, compliance-wise, in every way, shape, or form, those products that are offered are the banks, right? So we are responsible for it. And so it's not going to be enough to just say, yeah, I'll fill out some paperwork and I sponsor the issuance of a card and I review a couple of disclosures and cardholder agreements. You really need to take the bank solutions, embed it into a third-party ecosystem. So your fintech partner can build the UI around it. But again, you have the controls and the line of sight that you need to really stand in front of a regulator and outline, we know what's going on. And that is ultimately the key, in my opinion.
So you mentioned, you know, the embedded piece of it. You know, How is FinWise cutting through the noise? I mean, we talked about the noise. We talked about all the noise around BaaS, but how are you cutting through that noise that's going on?
In most cases, a sponsor bank and their oversight, they sample, right? Send me 50 loans, send me 100 loans, and then manually review it. But especially in a large relationship, if you do millions of loans every year, it's virtually impossible to manually do a statistically relevant review, right? So that sets you up for trouble. So what FinWise did is it built this platform. And when we approve a fintech partner, I'm happy to talk about the process, you know, so that we pick the right ones. We approve and review every aspect of that program, right? Underwriting models, terms, conditions, everything. When the partners then go out and do their customer acquisition, they really do a form of, I would call it, pre-underwriting. They apply the approved standards, and then all the applicable data gets ingested into our own platform by API, and we re-underwrite the loan, making sure the partner stuck to the agreed-upon guidelines. And so if you have a loan that doesn't meet that, now it spits out. Wow. And you review it. If you actually still approve it, well, then you document it as an exception to the credit policy.
Right.
But you can literally say, rightfully, to a regulator, I've seen every single loan.
Yeah.
It has gone through the filter.
Great.
And then on top of that, right, so that's the technology piece that's important. But we augment that with the human insights, where every quarter we do an on-site visitation with our partners. Sometimes it's virtual, but one quarter we focus on all things BSA. One quarter it's all things compliance. Then it's a quarter of IT. So you're not just looking at every loan, but you're keeping your finger on the tap just to make sure there's nothing else. That already taught us how technology is important. And so now as we're expanding into the sponsorship of card programs or payment solutions, right? May that be ACH and Wire and RTP and FedNow and RPPS and a few others. We're putting those into an open banking platform where we have ledgering capabilities. So we can take checking accounts. We can take savings accounts. We can take those payment rails, embed them in a third-party ecosystem. But in order to do that, you got to go through our KYC. Nothing happens till you pass our KYC. We will do the transaction monitoring, right? We don't delegate that. And so that gives you a lot of that line of sight and control that is just so critical and that has often been neglected.
That's a lot different than what we've seen over the years with the traditional bank sponsorship model.
Yeah.
So that's definitely a unique approach.
Are you guys system of record in that, that ladder, the deposit side and payment side aspect?
We can be. We limit ourselves when it comes, like, for example, to card processing to a small number of processors. And in some cases, they don't have ledgering capability. So in those cases, in our platform, we will have the ledger.
Right.
It's basically a digital core.
Yeah.
And do that in other cases. If, you know, the card processor is approved by us and they have the ledgering capabilities, they went through our review and we feel comfortable having them be a system of record and tie us in for the other pieces. Still means, though, you got to use my KYC before you get
there. That's great.
Right?
I love the using technology to enforce kind of compliance and controls. And it sounds like the approach that FinWise is taking is a little bit different than some in the industry, but how are you seeing that benefit FinWise and then some of the fintechs that you support?
Here's a quick message from the Accrued Series sponsor. As default rates continue to rise and margins compress in lending, financial organizations are searching for solutions to combine that operational efficiency with innovation. Look no further, as LoanPro allows lenders to enhance their origination, servicing, collections, and payments using the foundation of a modern lending core. Check out loanpro.io to learn more about how over 600 financial organizations have modernized their tech stack with LoanPro.
Yeah, so when you look at the world of fintech, right, a lot of what's happening right now is because what I just described wasn't possible, right? I mean, when you look at the early fintechs, that's what they wanted. They wanted to have basically a customized version of the bank's core, but the bank's cores are all 1990s technology. They're designed for, here's a brick and mortar building. Come on in, give me money and we deposit it, or come take money and we'll loan it to you.
Exactly.
It's not designed for customizing and taking it elsewhere. And that's what, as a result of that, has given birth to this very patchwork ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And that's ultimately where we solve some operational issues. When you look at some fintechs right now, the way they function is, let's say they have a credit card program. They have a sponsor bank for that. And maybe that bank even helps with some ACH when it comes to loan payments. But then they have another vendor for KYC, or in some other loan products. Let's say it's a lending product and they want to disperse a loan via push to card, right? It'd be a direct transaction. Well, then they deal with another bank, a different tech stack and all that. And by the time it's all said and done, they deal with four different tech stacks, three or four different banks. And yet nobody has clear line of sight into where's the money coming from? Where is it going? Because it's so cobbled together. Yeah. And so by being in many ways the one-stop shop, or it could be a two-stop shop, like so. And when we partner with LoanPro, you're kind of the one end that takes care of the loan servicing. We're kind of the rest. You have two tech stacks, one bank. So now operationally it's easier, but then also to keep the program safe on the compliance side is a whole lot easier just because we see it all. And, and that's where you make a big difference.
100%. And even on the flip side, from a loan pro perspective, if that fintech grows so big and you don't want to support every new, you know, lending product that they roll out, they can plug in a different sponsor bank as well so that they can continue to grow and you can continue to stick within your, you know, bank policy guidelines.
Exactly. That's there. But even there, I'll throw, you know, one qualifier. Okay. You know, I've often said to fintechs, you need to have more than one bank for, you know, it's just smart.
Exactly right.
But for us as a bank, honestly, we're kind of picky as to who would you potentially choose, because you can become quickly collateral damage these days. And if a partner were to choose the wrong bank, we definitely would have to have some discussions there.
Right? Well, and even this morning today we're recording this on Friday, March 1st. So just kind of put that in perspective, but like this morning it was announced that another banking as a service provider has been removed from their sponsor bank. We don't have any details yet, but we can kind of assume based upon past behaviors of what actually happened there. And, you know, with that being said, the only constant that we're seeing in this industry is that it just keeps changing. It day to day, sometimes hour to hour, it keeps changing. In the space of sponsor banking and fintech collaborations, how is FinWise riding this wave of change and shaping the future of the landscape? Especially as you mentioned, you guys are pretty particular on who you bring in. How are you staying on top of that wave without falling behind?
You take some tried and proven core banking principles. Mm-hmm. You take a disciplined approach that's sometimes hard because human nature takes you in a different direction. But here's what I mean by that. So tried and true banking principles. When you take the issues that have been experienced and you condense it down, 80, 90% of it comes down to this. Do you know who you're doing business with and are they who they say they are, right? So it's the KYC component. Yeah. If you can make sure that you know that and can prove it to a regulator, you're in pretty good shape. The other pieces are, where's the money coming from and where is it going, right? In other words, is anything that runs through you money laundering or not? And so that's that line of sight component. If you just cover those bases, you already set yourself apart. And so whatever you do, that has to really go through your mind, right? Is it that? And then maybe a third piece that's a more fintech specific principle is the sniff test. I've used that a couple of times as an example. If a fintech brings a program to you, is that something you would actually offer in your branch? Right? I've used as an example the idea of tipping. I'm 100% certain there's not going to be a single bank in the country that says, you know what, come on in. We're going to loan you money. We're going to charge you interest. Just give me a tip, right? That wouldn't happen. So if you would never offer it in your branch, why would you sponsor it? Because it is your product, right?
Great point.
Now, the other part when I talked about, you got to fight human nature, right? If you're in business, you typically have that strong urge, the customer's right. I want to make my customers happy. And that's where there is often a fundamental misunderstanding. Too many banks that jumped into this without thinking it through viewed the fintech as a customer, right? So if the fintech wants, we do.
Fintech gets, yeah.
The fintech is not a customer. The fintech is a vendor. Is a vendor of the bank that services the bank's customers. It happens to be a vendor that pays for the privilege, but they are a vendor.
Robert, would you say that the perspective has shifted from being a customer to now I'm extending my charter out into the world versus I'm allowing you to send me customers and money?
Well, let's put it this way. For the team at Finwise, which is something that really attracted me, that has always been the mindset, right? The bank is offering its solutions through a fintech partner. An increasing number of banks has woken up to the fact that, yes, the fintech is a vendor. But here's where that affects the mindset, right? What do you do with a vendor that doesn't perform? Well, you sometimes give them a chance or two, but then ultimately you fire them, right? Mm-hmm. Now, human nature is, well, they're paying me money. I want the revenue. No. If they're not performing, you got to fire them.
So the old adage of some revenue is better than no revenue is not always a good one.
Not a good one. I think the banks are starting to have the power differential in the relationship now. When you had so much VC money going into the industry, the fintechs really did a lot of times, especially with smaller banks, they had that power differential. And so now's a great time, at least in my opinion, for banks to start to rise up, take that power differential back, and really start helping shape the industry in a way that's going to protect it. But I would welcome your thoughts on that, Robert.
One of the things going on right now, or what it reminds me of, is the dot-com bubble.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
The 90s, yeah. Right? There was a time where you had a nice PowerPoint and maybe you had a domain, didn't even have to have it live. Here's $30 million, go, right? And then all of a sudden, the dot-com bubble blew up and you saw in the newspaper things, oh, the internet's going away, it's a fad, it's dead, right? But what really happened is the real use cases started to emerge because the internet itself was here to stay. Nobody back then envisioned that we would stream all of our entertainment over the internet, that we would do video conference calls, voice over IP, and so on. And something similar is going on with BaaS, right? 3 years ago, I have a nice PowerPoint here, $100 million, go. Yeah. And then crazy stuff happened.
I can't believe I missed that, by the way. Bursting. Like, I can't believe I missed that era. I missed both of them now.
But I think, like the internet, banking as a service or fintech relationships are here to stay. There's that, toothpaste is out of the tube, but now the real use cases are starting to emerge. And just like there's many players in the internet days that blew up early, now the real use cases are coming out and you're figuring out how to do this right. And as we've already seen, you mentioned some of the news. Yeah, there's some victims now, right? Sometimes it's fintech, sometimes it's banks that are exiting the space. So that cleanup is going on and it will go on for a little bit longer. I think we have not nearly seen the end of it. But when it's all said and done, there will be a much healthier ecosystem. And it's an ecosystem that will solve real world problems, not some of the gimmicky products that are solutions looking for a problem, but real stuff. And that's ultimately exciting, right?
Well, and every story has, that hurdle, that big piece that you have to get through. And, we've talked about all the great things that Finwise is doing and the direction you're going and you're enabling the technology, but I'd really like to understand, what are some of the challenges that you're facing as a sponsor bank? Hey, Ted Huff here. Ever thought about how you could streamline your application and underwriting process? Well, let me introduce you to Under. Why keep using the outdated methods of PDFs when you can digitize them effortlessly? All you gotta do is upload the PDF, send it out for digital signature, and voila, you're set for the digital age. Are you curious on how to make that happen? Head over to under.io/FTC and get started for free. It's really that simple. How are you guys turning those challenges into victories?
Here's maybe fundamentally the biggest challenge. And I've seen that not just at FinWise, but in my years in the industry. I've sometimes said fintechs, heavy on the tech, light on the fin, right? That's sometimes the big issue. And when you really think it through, the fintechs as technology companies have often goals that are directly opposed to the goals of a bank, mm-hmm. right? A fintech is valued by the number of subscribers, number of customers. So they want to drive those numbers up. Some of them are stolen identities or things that, who cares? It's the subscriber, right? It meets their mission. The goal of the bank is totally different. And that philosophical difference is maybe the biggest challenge, right? And somewhat related to that is fintechs as technology companies tend to apply a lot of common sense, right? Because they come from a world where 1 + 1 = 1. That just makes sense. You look at banking regulation, sometimes there is no common sense, but it's still the law. You have from some of the technology leaders statements like, well, you know, if there are rules, go break them. That's fine in the technology world, but when it comes to a regulated industry, you break the rule.
Yeah. Can't do it.
You're in trouble. You cannot do it. And so to get those philosophies aligned is ultimately the biggest challenge.
That makes sense. And specifically regarding regulatory challenges and risk management, you talked about a couple of things earlier. KYC that you own end-to-end, AML checks that are 100%. What are some of the other compliance and operational efficiencies that you guys have put in place that have really increased the high standards of compliance?
Some of the things that we do, and to be honest, some of our partners don't love it, but that's still what it is. You know, if they use some sort of model, right, and especially when it comes to lending, you find the deployment of AI, which in itself is fine, but that can get you into hot water when it comes to fair lending and all that, right? So our partners have to regularly get their models tested by knowledgeable third parties. That's not cheap, but to make sure that you're not accidentally violating fair lending rules, that's just table stakes. Even though we have all these, you know, site visits that I mentioned, our partners have to get once a year from a knowledgeable party a BSA audit, a compliance audit, an IT audit. So there's just constantly checking, right? We check, they, fintech partners, are the first line of defense, and then there's an external look at it. And if you keep doing that, if something's not right, you catch it when it's this small, not when it's this big, right? This is one of those things where you take technology where you can, but then also use some of the human insights to keep the technology in check.
Great. It's almost like you really are sub-delegated or deputized regulators for the FDIC and the Fed and for the OCC and those roles that you're playing.
It really is. You know, the panel I was on earlier in the week, it was the CEO of a Canadian bank that has somewhat of a similar model. He has been doing it for a long time. And he actually called it as he's really providing regulation as service to his partners.
That's an interesting way to put it.
And to some degree, you could argue we're kind of the regulators of the fintechs. It's upon us to make sure we do it the right way.
You could start charging the regulators with this type of a model.
No. We just work with them. And
I'm not going to be invited back to this show after this.
Getting us all in trouble here, Sarah.
No, I'm kidding.
One of the things that, you know, I hear you talk about all the regulators and regulation as a service, I think is what you called it, or the Canadian bank.
Well, that's what
the Canadian banker called it.
The Canadian bank called
You know, looking at it from that perspective, there's a lot of technology you mentioned that is in a lot of places that end up in the human hands with so many technology changes. And, you know, I'll throw out the wonderful buzzword of, good old AI, whatever you want to put in, what bucket you want to put that in. When you look at that, how are you guys staying ahead? How are you guys staying innovative? And can you share how you're leveraging the technology to stay ahead?
It starts with the non-technical part, which is in this business, compliance is at the core of it, right? It has to be first. So when you look at what is needed to demonstrate appropriate compliance, then you can start looking at the various functions and look at what can be automated, you know, at least at this point. Once you identify those areas, you can look at, does it make sense for us to build it? Like we did with our loan processing platform. You can look at, do we have someone build it for us, or do we deploy an existing solution? Based on cost and timing, you make the decision what makes the most sense. Now, we're fortunately now living in a time when you can keep your platforms more scalable, right? With, you know, the cloud and AI and whatnot else, which helps for the future. We're not necessarily in the traditional Bancor world where it's 1990s technology with a ton of spaghetti code. If you make a change here, five things break over there. Everything is a little bit more modular, and that in itself helps, right? And our platform that we're standing up to a zero trust-based platform with a dual ledger where you constantly have your checks in the system, the checks and balances where you can do things that make it easier and quicker to reconcile and to keep your finger on the tab. Mm-hmm. And AI will be great. You just have to make sure, since actually the regulation is pretty clear on when you use a model, when you use AI, what requirements does it have to meet? And so AI by itself is something that can really make a difference, but I'm a little bit of a wet blanket on AI, because what AI, in my opinion, does is it's never going to be smarter than its creators, right? It's just going to do what the creators do faster and quicker. And so the quality of an AI really depends on the quality of the creator of the AI. If there is a flaw in there, what an AI will do is it will magnify it, right? So there's a certain risk there. If something is not done right, then things can really break, right? And I remember, as an example, not pertaining to banking, but I remember there was some early test with some conversational AI all of a sudden, after some questioning, the AI felt that the Holocaust was a great thing, right? Yes. Just because you tricked it and it reflected incorrect thinking. And those are the dangers where you really have to make sure when you deploy it, you really got to make sure it's doing more of the right things and faster, not all of a sudden magnifying a mistake.
When I look at AI being used in banking and payments, identifying abnormalities, the ability to do the data crunching, the ability to do the identification of how things have changed, I think all of that is fantastic. But the one thing that we can't get, even out of generative AI, what it lacks is the ability to do assessment of relevance and assessment of impact, because all it's doing is looking just at the data and saying, what does the data say? Doesn't matter what the context was in a lot of cases. And that comes down also to what you were talking about. It's only as good as the creator. Mm-hmm. And we don't quite yet have enough control over the creation to give it that view of relevance.
Exactly. That's exactly the point, right? I mean, I talked a couple times here recently to our CTO, and when it comes to things like auto reconciliation of everything going on, right? His big point is, before we can automate that, we have to understand how to do it by hand, yes, right? If you don't understand it by hand manually, then you cannot automate it. And that's when it comes down to, like, identifying abnormalities and whatnot else, you really got to make sure you identify the right ones. Yeah, you can identify a bunch of irrelevant abnormalities, and then you spend your time investigating those that are, you know, outliers and don't necessarily matter, but they're still a time suck then, right? Yeah.
And I jumped way ahead just because it was something that was in my head. But, you know, one of the things that you've mentioned a couple times, that you guys have built some of your own technology. And that seems to be a theme in just about everybody that we've been talking to, is that they've built a piece of the technology where they feel that they have the expertise and the understanding, but they've outsourced other things, and then they plugged in other pieces and just really, but kept control over the inputs and the outputs. I'd really like to understand how these services and solutions are going to drive lenders and fintechs forward.
As the LoanPro team knows, I'm a big fan of them because it allows for customization while still operating in a safe environment. Right, wrong, indifferent. A lot of the things that are pertaining to banking, they're still pretty outdated, right? So, you know, it's not that long ago when I had to open somewhere a bank account and I walked away literally with half an inch of papers afterwards that were printed out, right? And it's like, that's still what you have. And while we're nowhere near yet to have it all digital, with deploying technology the way we do, we can automate a lot more of that, eliminate manual steps. And in the end, that's what fintechs want, right? I mean, with their technology, they're really good about customizing solutions that meet users' needs, doing things in a way that are more intuitive, right? And if we're enabling them to do that by bringing the right technology to them, then that's mission accomplished, right? And that's where I think the synergy of the bank and fintech ecosystem really lies. Banks traditionally, I think it's fair to say, not good at marketing, right? Not very good at innovation. It's pretty shocking how, with a few exceptions, you look at mobile banking apps, they're pretty darn clunky. It's like you feel like you need to use an owner's manual just to figure out some basic functions that you want to do. Whereas you look at a lot of the fintech created apps, intuitively, you know, a child just says, okay, I'll do this, and it works. Mm-hmm. If we can enable the fintechs to do what they do best by giving them at least the back end, the plumbing, then I think the mission is accomplished.
Or if the bank, or if the fintech gives the bank line of sight, direct line of sight into that system, so that you can have a good understanding of what's happening from a compliant perspective. I think it takes everybody in the ecosystem working together to create good compliance standards.
At the same time, that's also the challenge that some of the banks have, right? I mean, most of the sponsor banks out there are smaller and often don't have the technical expertise. I mean, I feel really blessed to have the team that we have, which was Richard Thiessens as our CTO that can build stuff and be top modern. I know from firsthand experience, not every bank has that, right? And doesn't quite know how to get there. But ultimately, they got to figure that out if they want to be survivors in this thing.
Support provided by Skyflow. What if you could build fast but not break privacy? What if you could ensure data privacy, governance, and compliance with just a few API calls? What if you could worry less about PCI requirements while actually improving privacy and security? How much more time would your team have to truly innovate? How much faster could you build and ship new features? How much more powerful could your app be? Skyflow is a zero-trust data privacy vault delivered as an API. Skyflow's radically simple design lets you collect, secure, and tokenize personal information like card data and payment details. And with built-in features like encrypted data analysis and sharing, anonymization, and advanced governance, your days of choosing between data security and data usability are over. Whether you're just concerned with PCI compliance or need to go further to include CCPA, GDPR, SOC 2, and beyond, Skyflow has you covered. What if you could build fast but not break privacy? With Skyflow, you can. Visit skyflowsecure.com today to learn how.
You've mentioned a number of things about how you guys are doing things differently, how you're moving forward with technology, not just yours, but through partnerships that we've discussed, like LoanPro and a handful of others. Looking at that, I'm going to ask you to pull out your crystal ball, sit it down in the middle of the table, and give us your perspective of what future trends and opportunities are on the horizon for sponsor banks like yourself and the fintechs when collaborating together in a harmonious manner.
So, my crystal ball that changes every couple of months these days, right? Based on how fast things are changing. Right. But here's where I think it's headed. We'll see a lot less collaboration between banks and fintechs on anything pertaining to consumer programs. There's a number of reasons for that. You know, a lot of it is the change in VC money, because I think it has become very apparent that consumer programs are much harder to make profitable. Lower volumes and often who's pursued are segments that are not necessarily a profitable banking customer, right? And so sooner or later, that falls apart. But I still see in the small business, mid-sized business community, a very large underserved market. You know, I've had some LLCs where I had some rental properties, and opening a business account with the bank for that, it was shocking. I mean, it's like 1990s. There's like no tools, and it was a pretty big bank that really helped me make things easier for myself. If you're a Fortune 500 company and you have one of the top five banks customize some sort of corporate card program, you're in good shape. But if you're not Fortune 500, it gets really hard to have a banking product that makes your operational efficiency better. And that's where, like I said, it's underserved. There's a lot of opportunity, and that's where, you know, some opportunities are there. But then there's other opportunities that are not necessarily fitting that fintech description, right? Because right now everyone thinks of fintech as a neobank of sorts. Mm-hmm. But there is a whole lot of other use cases where banking products can make or enable a real business. So let me give you an example. You know, there's some of the food pickup and grocery pickup services out there that at one point when they started out had a problem. And that was when they had the driver that was supposed to pick up something, right? Let's say it was food. They got hungry and said, you know, I want to throw in an order of wings for myself. Yeah. Now you had an accounting nightmare, right? It's like, how do I take the personal expense out? But then also, how do you prevent a situation that someone shows up at the wrong restaurant and then tries to pick up the wrong order? Solutions have been created there where, you know, you give the drivers a prepaid card, corporate card, but it's inactive until they are at the place with the right GPS coordinates. And then you fund it in real time down to the penny so that they cannot add anything. And then ideally on the back end, you automatically integrate it into the bank system so it feeds the GL or whatever else is needed.
Yeah.
Right? The food delivery or grocery delivery company might not view itself as a fintech, but they need these products by someone. And then these banking products enable the real business, right? They're not in the business of making interchange. They're in the business of picking up stuff and delivering it. And I think we've just scratched the surface as to what all is possible when you embed banking products in the B2B, B2B2C setting. And the use cases that keep emerging are just fascinating. I mean, even you take the healthcare sector. It is amazing how antiquated money moves in the healthcare industry, right? And you occasionally see someone that knows the space and takes technology and understands if we bundle in some banking services, we really solve headaches. That's where it's ultimately going to be heading.
100%.
Now, there's still a few use cases, in my opinion, in the consumer world where the right combination of bank and fintech will solve real-world problems, but in a profitable way. I'm not going to give all of those away. Some of the secret stuff for sauce for ourselves. But they're still there. You just got to be more selective.
I'm hearing you say it's headed to B2B, which I 100% agree. And you know, eliminating first party fraud scenarios, which is like the delivery driver experience that you talked about. But it really is safeguarding those B2B embedded financial flows that we could really focus on too. And I think just even having... As you have ERP systems that are moving down market to become like operating systems for specific business verticals, like a veterinary clinic mm-hmm. operating system or a chiropractic clinic operating system. There's so many opportunities to embed financial products into those types of systems.
But even if you take, it's a little bit the other side of the world of payments. But when you look at a provider like Toast, yeah. they initially created a point of sale system specific to restaurants. And then all of a sudden that became your order management yeah. system and the online ordering and whatnot else. And they just focused on that segment and then did more than just moving money and created a very profitable, good business, yes. right?
Yeah.
And,
which is very similar to Mindbody. Mindbody did the exact yeah. same thing yeah. with the self-wellness yeah. arena as well.
It's horizontal integration for these sort of SaaS technology companies that focus on a specific niche.
Exactly.
Yeah. But as they go to the different horizontals, as they scale, like having a bank partner that helps them be like, okay, that's an embedded flow. That's an embedded flow. We can automate that. I think that just creates such value from a sponsor bank perspective to a growing fintech.
Probably 6 months or a year from now, the crystal ball might show something different. But what ultimately is going to happen is, like we said, right, the dust is going to settle. The real use cases for what we call these days banking as a service will emerge, and they will solve real world problems because the technology will be available. The understanding is there. People learn from the mistakes that have been made, and that's where the real excitement comes in, right?
Well, that is a great statement to end today's episode of Accrued, a FinTech Confidential series presented by LoanPro. And Robert, as always, man, I always love the conversations with you, and I'm so happy to have had you on. So thank you for taking time out of your busy day.
Thanks for having me. It was fun.
Great.
Good flow, and I'm sure we'll have more discussions as time goes yeah. on.
If you haven't already subscribed to the podcast, YouTube channel, or even the newsletter, all you have to do is go to fintechconfidential.com to get all of them. If you want to dive directly in and get told about or alerted or emailed every time we have a new episode or something new coming out, go ahead and sign up at fintechconfidential.com/access to find out when it happens. As we wrap up today's episode, I've got one last thing for you. If you're in the trenches fighting fraud and financial crime, you know it's a complex battlefield. That's where Hawk's AI tools for real-time payment screening, AML, transaction monitoring, and dynamic customer risk rating come into play. These aren't just buzzwords. They're game changers designed to make your compliance more effective and less of a headache. Imagine slashing through false positives with precision and giving your compliance strategy the edge it needs. Head on over to gethawkai.com to sign up for a demo and discover how their platform can revolutionize how you fight fraud and financial crime.
This has been a production of DD3 Media with all rights reserved. This is provided for informational purposes only. It is not offered or intended to be used as legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. We strive to provide accurate and up-to-date information, but will not be responsible for any missing facts or inaccurate information. You comply and understand that you should use any of this information at your own risk. Cryptocurrencies are highly volatile financial assets, so research and make your own financial decisions.